Holy crap. Man, muscle memory, dude.
What'd you do?
Ross Tucker's joining us this coming football season on Tuesdays at 7 o'clock, which is now. So we're getting
Is he here?
He just texted me.
Oh.
Starting today. Dude. I had completely forgotten.
Wait, at what time?
Right now. Yeah.
Okay.
Yes.
So he's calling in.
He texted me. We usually call him. So he was all ready to go. And I had our boss had texted me 2 weeks ago, hey, Ross is back on for the upcoming football season. And I was probably somewhere where I didn't make a note in the rundown. I was very excited about it, naturally.
Are we still doing the mayonnaise? Are we doing the mayo game day be delicious?
I don't know. I
hope you didn't switch over to Duke or something.
Different
mayonnaise. That'd be awkward if we've already done the mayo game day be delicious.
We'll have to ask. Yeah, we're scrambling a little bit, but I think, I know Ross is available because he just texted, are we starting today, right? 7 o'clock Central Time. And I see his phone number down there, and Ben is chatting with him, and we have him right now.
Yay!
Joined right now by the great Ross Tucker, who is our Odyssey NFL insider. Ross, apologies. Our boss texted us 2 weeks ago, hey, Ross is back on this season. I was jubilant about this, but I forgot to put it in the rundown that this is week one and we need to talk to you. How are you, my friend?
I am doing wonderful, but I was wondering what was going on. I hadn't seen any social posts. I mean, we have an entire top five city in the country that has their morning routine revolve around this.
That's
and
true.
I hadn't seen any social media posts. I hadn't seen anything from either one of you guys.
Yeah.
And it's 8:02 Eastern, 7:02 Central. And I'm thinking, oh my gosh, imagine driving to work. I know everybody's got these rich oil companies or whatever they're going to right now. And they got to sit there and buy and sell oil all day. They could at least know that they're going to get their Ross Tucker at 7
That's
o'clock
so
on
true.
Tuesday
That's
on the
right.
way.
So true. Yes, yes, yes.
Energy traders in general, you were a big hit with the Enron folks back in the day. You're the only thing.
Is that one of the most annoying things about living in Houston that everybody thinks everybody's a rich oil person? That's got to be up there with the Houston we got a problem thing.
No, that's bad. The Houston we have a problem is you hit the nail on the head with that one.
I think if anything, people underestimate how just how many wealthy people there are in Houston compared to Dallas, because in Dallas they let you know about it.
Yeah.
If you make $37,000 in a year in Dallas, you're scrounging up money for your first down payment on a BMW you can't afford. Or in Houston, people just go about their business and they don't necessarily flaunt it as much. Women
are
less slutty down here.
You know what's funny about that, Seth?
What's
you know what's funny about that? So in 2002 and 2003, I played for the Cowboys. Okay, and I'm not kidding. I told people Dallas gave me a lot of L.A. vibes.
Yeah,
you know what I mean?
Make it till you make it.
Very, very, very showy and all of that. And then the craziest thing is where I used to get a massage when I was playing for the Cowboys, I would go in there. Now, keep in mind, I'm from Pennsylvania and whatever that means. And I went to college at Princeton. So I'm still a young guy. I would go to this place to get the massage. And they might have had 40, at least 40 treadmills, ellipticals, all those things. Guys, to this day, I've never seen it before or after. There would be a line of women, 8 to 10 deep, waiting to get on one of the 40 ellipticals and treadmills. I was this is the craziest thing I've ever seen. I've never seen a line multiple people deep of people waiting to get on an elliptical or a treadmill.
That was because those women can be distracted by their OnlyFans accounts, whereas back then they just had to kill time. I think is the problem. Yeah.
Hey.
Yeah. And as far as massages in Houston, I mean, there's just nothing going on there to speak of. So yeah, if anything, we've gotten more massage jokes in the last few years than jokes about big oil money.
Yeah.
Or anything.
Thanks, Deshaun. We appreciate that. Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, by the way, on the line is Odyssey NFL insider Ross Tucker. Make sure to check out the Ross Tucker Football Podcast, a daily NFL podcast on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcast. So that's That's how. Can we still say "May your game day be delicious," Ross? Because I really enjoyed doing that last year. Are we allowed to do that?
I don't know. I guess they're not sponsoring it. Yeah. I'm glad they're talking about my podcast. I can assure you, I'm not sponsoring this right now yet. But I'm glad I'm on with you guys.
Yes.
Check out the show. Or I got the betting show, Even Money Podcast today. YouTube is blowing up. YouTube.com/RossTuckerNFL. And I would say, let's not say. Number one, they're not paying for it. Number two, mayo is not delicious, okay? Spicy mustard's where it's at. Mayo sandwich, get some spicy mustard on it.
Okay, we're just talking about random condiments now.
Hey,
that's what we're doing.
Ross. You're an offensive lineman in the NFL forever. Obviously, you do color commentary. You did a couple Texans games last year. Earlier, we had Phil Sims, a clip from Phil Sims talking about just the scheme last year. You know, the offensive line as players were one thing, but that the predictability of the scheme and the simplicity of the pass protection, was also a huge issue. And I agree with that, by and large. This is what I've been saying all offseason, and I think I've started to see the fruition of it or some hints of it during training camp. It's that, man, you can be a solid offensive line without having a bunch of all pros or Pro Bowl or offensive linemen on there if you're just simply well coached and if you communicate well enough. But now that the rubber meets the road in week one, my faith is getting tested a little bit just because the Texans still don't look great individually on paper as offensive linemen, but it's a much cleaner operation. So, like, how much better can they be than last year just based on having a cleaner operation?
Well, so, I mean, I could talk about this for the whole segment, and I just might. A couple things. You guys know I had 9 different offensive line coaches in the NFL. I can't begin to tell you how wide a disparity there was in terms of competency and how much I think it had an impact on the teams that I was on and why offensive line coaches deservingly that are really good get paid what they do. I think it really goes a long way towards having an impact on the outcome of games. I really do. You know, you could take the same 5 guys with a bad offensive line coach, and they're going to be below average. And if you have an excellent offensive line coach, I think those guys can be average to maybe even slightly above. And the other thing I say about it is that, you know, it's nice to have like an all-pro lineman. You want that, right? I would much rather have 5 average guys that I know what I'm going to get out of than 3 all-pros and 2 below average, if that makes sense, right? Mm-hmm. On some level with offensive line play, and I think D-line's the opposite. D-line, you'd rather have, like, a couple below average than have, like, some absolute rock stars. For offensive line, you're kind of only as good as your weakest link, right? So if you have guys that are struggling, it's really, really hard to overcome that, especially if there's multiple ones. By the way, I want to read you guys something really quick.
Okay.
This is, like, amazing timing. I was talking on my show about Laremy Tunsil, because this was a Washington thing on the Ross Tucker podcast, because obviously the Commanders traded for him. Okay, Tunsils. We talked about this. 19 penalties last year for Tunsil, 3rd most in a season since 1999. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. He was penalized 95 yards, but he also nullified 120 yards in games.
Yeah.
That's the 8th most since 99. 95 plus 120, that's 215. 2nd most in the season since 1999. He was tied with Cowboys left tackle Tyler Guyton, who got benched twice, with 11 stalled drives, meaning drives where after his penalty, the team not only didn't score points, but didn't gain another first down. I've been dying to get more context into just how bad Tunsil's penalties were on the team. And it's like wild to think that somebody traded what the Commanders traded to pay Laremy what he gets paid to nullify and stall that many drives.
Ross, you're taking the words right out of my mouth. My follow-up to Seth's question was going to be, so it sounds like the Laremy Tunsil trade actually makes sense to you, unlike a lot of people outside of Houston that look at it and go, why are you trading away your best pass protector when your quarterback got sacked 52 times? I can tell you 77 of those 120 yards was the first play that Nico Collins was back from his hamstring injury, a screen pass that Nico took 77 yards to the house against the Cowboys on one of the first plays of the game. It was frustrating here. And I would add to that too, and I know Seth would as well. It wasn't just the penalties and all the things you just said. Laremy was elevated in that offensive line room as some sort of example or leader, and really was not that. He didn't practice a lot, wasn't a dog in the run game. It feels like D'Amico Ryans has gone out and Nick Caserio have gone out and made an effort to find guys that really love football, that are really tough, maybe not as physically talented as Laremy, but nowhere to be and really love to grind.
I love everything you just said. I was not good, okay? I was below average athletic ability. But when I would watch the Texans last year and I'd see guys coming free, it was infuriating, like infuriating. And whether you want to blame the O-line coach or the OC or the players, as always, it's a combination of all of them, but it was not pro football, and it was not good enough. And I have two missions for this season. One is I'm single-handedly going to get people to stop saying that a guy that has 19 penalties is a really good player or elite. You're necessarily not if you have 19 penalties. You are not that. I don't care if you're great in one-on-ones in practice. I don't care if you have great feet. You're not an elite player if you have 19 penalties. The other thing is, I'm going to say 6-7 so many times that it's not going to be funny or popular with kids anymore. I'm so sick of my daughters saying 6-7.
I don't know what
I still don't know what it means, but I say it any chance I get. Because I am going to just hammer that thing until it's no longer cool.
Until it's not cool. I've never even heard it before. What is it? When do they use it?
What?
No.
Oh, my gosh. Sean,
yeah.
If you have any kids between – anybody listening right now, if you have any kids between, like, 8 and 15
– Yeah, I don't. Yeah.
They say – it's like from a song, I guess, where they're talking about a basketball player who's 6'7", but the guy goes 6'7". Like, the way he says it's just weird. So kids think it's funny. And they say it all the time, and I'm so sick of it that I'm gonna pound this idiom or whatever it's called into submission.
Good job.
According to AI, it's used to tell someone to go away or stop bothering you.
Oh, okay.
Is that how have you gotten it from your kids that way? Like, Dad, 6-7.
No.
Are you sure? You sure?
No, they
Ross,
say say it anytime. Like, what time's dinner? I don't know, like 6-7.
Okay.
And they all die. Like every time one of them says it, they all die laughing like it's the funniest thing they've ever heard. And I'm like, God, how are we not over this yet?
Yeah.
I'm 46. I'm over it.
And I think you can single-handedly make it uncool, Ross, if you put your mind to it. So that and Laremy Tunsil, those are your two co-celebras right now, huh?
Well, okay, I'm not going to just say Laremy Tunsil, but I'll say any player with that many penalties.
Yes, yeah.
I think we need to get to the point where we stop talking about them like they're an elite player.
Yeah.
Ross, this is what would drive me insane last year, was that people would try to stick up for Laremy Tunsil, and they would say, well, he's just trying to time the snap count, and that's why he's having these false starts. And I'm like, I know why he's doing it. It's plain as day why he's doing it. He's trying to get an advantage or an edge. The problem is that the really genuinely great offensive linemen, offensive tackles like Trent Williams or those guys, on average, will have 2 to 4 pre-snap penalties per year. They do it without cheating, or if they do it, they time the snap count appropriately. Ross, it was years of Laremy Tunsil blaming the center for his problems with his false starts, well, none of the other inferior offensive linemen seemed to have an issue with the center. It was always, well, you know, this center's snap count or this quarterback's cadence is different or something. It was infuriating. You're exactly right. And the problem is,
who cares what the reasoning or logic is?
Right.
Like, that's like
hey, I only robbed that bank because I needed the money. Yeah. Bank.
I held the D tackle because I didn't want him to kill the quarterback. Like, what? like, there's always a reason, but that doesn't make it okay. And listen, I'm okay. Those guys are all trying to time up the count now. Okay. You want to get one or two a year. I can live with that if you're trying to time it up. If you can get a jump on every single snap and for one or two a year, but let me just say also, like, Laremy Tunsil, Lane Johnson, Trent Williams, these guys are so good. They don't need to do that. Yeah. They can still have the snap count advantage without having to get a false start. And it's maddening. Everything about the Texans O-line last year was maddening. Is this right, by the way? Like, is it going to be Ursary, Tomlinson, Andrews, Ingram, Howard? Is that the starter?
That is. That's the starting five. Yeah, what do you think?
That is wild, by the way. To look at the resources, I actually give D'Amico and Caserio a ton of credit. You look at the resources of their backup O-line, like second-round pick Blake Fisher, second-round pick Juice Scruggs, Cam Robinson this offseason, they gave him a bunch of money. You know, there are other organizations where those guys would be playing. They would be playing because the GM wants to save face or whatever. Thank goodness Caserio realizes none of that matters. Mm-hmm. There is no saving face. Get the five guys out there that give you the best chance to win games, because the reality is the team is absolutely loaded on defense. If the offensive line can just be average, they have a chance to go as far as they want to go.
Okay, insider calls are brought to you by Nationwide for your insurance and financial needs. Nationwide is on your side. Ross, do you have time for one more question? I don't know what your schedule is here.
Yes, quickly. I always have I have to record the betting show.
Okay, gotcha. Real quick.
Even Money. Why am I not saying the name of it?
Even Money. Where do you have the Texans in your power ranking? What's your prognostication for the Texans this coming season?
Ooh, okay, so I just did it. I just did power rankings on a Tuesday, Ross Tucker Football Podcast. I think I had them – I got to look at it. I think I had them 11.
Okay.
And right now I have them as like a 9 or 10 win team. Mm-hmm. The reality is when you're doing power rankings, you're really just talking about, I would say, question marks.
Yeah.
Okay? And so for the Texans, O-line and running back are like major question marks.
For sure.
So it's hard to put them in the top 10. If they answer those questions in the affirmative, well, then they could be almost as good as anybody. But those are question marks. And also, you know, I thought CJ took a little bit of a step back last year. And so sort of how he bounces back is another question mark as well. Because then, you know, you get into the top 10 guys, you're in rarefied air. I mean, almost all those teams have top 10 quarterbacks and really good teams and probably less question marks than the Texans. I think where the Texans really are in a good spot, the Texans, like, their defense should be ridiculous. I mean, their D-line, their secondary, it's very, very impressive. So, yeah, I think I had them 11 to start the year. Man. I do not have the Texans any of my first games, unfortunately.
I'll give you a quick little nugget. Keep your eye on Woody Marks, the running back. I think that you as an offensive lineman would appreciate this. By rookie standards, amazingly good in pass protection. So I think the team's going to trust him to be out there, and I think he ends up getting used a lot more than people outside Houston might expect.
Ooh, I like that. I'm still wanting to know. I still want the artist formerly known as Damian Pierce to get some carries. Like he did his rookie year when he was killing people.
Yeah,
too.
He seems to be a better fit for this offense than Bobby Slowick's offense, but he hasn't touched the ball much. He was injured, and he didn't practice until about the last week and a half of camp. So he's He's on the depth chart, but we'll see how he gets used. I'm with Seth on Woody Marks. Keep an eye on that one for sure. That's Ross Tucker. He is our Odyssey NFL insider. Make sure to check out the Ross Tucker Football Podcast, a daily NFL podcast on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcast. Ross, it's great to connect again. We can't wait for our Tuesday mornings with you throughout the season, man. Go get them.
Well, you could wait. You didn't even remember or think about it until I texted coming. You guys. So you could wait. Don't lie. See you guys.
You just dropped the mic on us right there.
Well, look, Ross knows what's going on here. You're the one that's supposed to keep track of things administratively because I'm pretty much useless.
Yeah.
This is
on me.
We're pretty much doomed here. If you're going downhill, this show's on it.
This is on me.
Good luck.
I got a random text from our boss 2 weeks ago. We got Ross Tucker coming on again, and it's on me that this wasn't in the rundown. Okay. We're good.
It's like asking the who are the two characters in Mice and Men? George. It's like asking George to run the show because Lenny's losing it.
Never read it. Yeah. Sorry.
You didn't have to read it in high school? Well, they did the cartoon was Lenny and George. They did a cartoon version of it too. Yeah. So
yep. Yeah. All right. So that was the great Ross Tucker, who seems to be perturbed with us. So let's get back to what we were going to hit here. It was great talking to Ross. I loved his Laramie Tunsil take because there were so many people in similar positions to Ross Tucker, Seth, basically outside the geofence of Houston here that said, what are you guys doing, man? You couldn't protect C.J. Stroud and you traded your best pass protector.
No, and the people that love to minimize the penalties, like, it's no big deal. It's 5 yards. Like, no, you haven't watched it. You haven't seen the first downs and touchdowns, the drives that are killed, the manageable situations that become third and long. All of the times that he's actively damaged the team out of nothing but pure selfishness. Those pre-snap penalties are 100% pure selfishness. And it was just unbelievable that there were people still sticking up for him through it all. It was unbelievable to me.
All right, here was D'Amico Ryans on the Rams yesterday at his press conference. He has the utmost respect for Sean McVay.
Yeah, I have the utmost respect for Sean and what he's been able to accomplish in his time there in L.A., team is always prepared, always ready to go, no matter what year it is, who's available for him. Like, he's had turnover, but he's continued to have success. He's a Super Bowl winning head coach, played in multiple NFC championship games, so we know they're going to be ready to go. One thing about Sean, his group, they're going to be very detailed, they're going to play hard, so it's going to be a four-quarter battle, and we're excited to go against these guys. Went against him a lot, and it's always been a tough challenge. He does a really good job with the motions, timing things up properly, putting defenses in conflict by all the motions and the snap points. So he does a really great job, really smart coach, really prepared. So looking forward to the challenge.
This is the first season that D'Amico is now going against all these NFC West teams that he was so familiar with.
Right, these teams that he's seen before. And a lot of them have changed. Like, the Seahawks have changed a lot, obviously. Yeah. But McVay
not
remains
the Rams.
McVay.
Yeah.
I think that the thing is that McVay has also changed his offense since D'Amico left, or at least started making that transition into kind of changing their style of run plays, etc. So I think D'Amico knows that he can't just go in thinking, oh, yeah, I know what McVay does. And if any of you start thinking that way, you're going to hurt yourself way more than you help yourself. I do think that one of the things that D'Amico excels at in teaching defensive football is explaining to guys, all right, most offenses, like, there's only so many plays you can run. The variation in schemes or between coordinators sometimes is just, how do they get to it? How do they get to what they want to do? How do they get to these plays? And it's a lot of the bells and the whistles. It's the pre-snap motion. It's the formations, all of those things that you got to teach your defensive players to kind of see through the fluff and nonsense and the misdirection and then just go out and play football. And D'Amico does a really good job of simplifying that for people. So that's the battle, I think, that no matter how McVay may have tweaked or changed his scheme, it's all of that misdirection stuff that you just got to teach your players how to see through it. And you know, that's when it's not a divisional opponent or something, that's a lot harder to do in the course of 1 week. But they have had 2 weeks to prepare for it. The other big part of it is that they haven't seen, you know, the Rams don't play any other starters in the preseason. So they really, in any given year at the beginning of the season, you really don't know what you're going to see or like how they're going to use Puka Nacua or anything like that. So there is a lot of uncertainty, but there is an advantage in D'Amico having faced them before, as long as D'Amico, as he'll tell you himself, doesn't think that he knows exactly what's going to happen.
But at least you've got film of how McVay uses Puka last year or whatever. Like, Davante Adams is a wild card in this because we have no idea what he looks like in a Rams uniform yet.
Well, but that's the thing. They can use Puka differently with a different supporting cast.
Yeah.
You know, Davante Adams is different than Cooper Kupp in some regards. So how do they use those two together compared to what they've done traditionally?
Yep. Here's McVay. D'Amico loving up on McVay. Here's Sean McVay and what he had to say yesterday about the Houston Texans.
Yeah, they're a great team. You know, I think they take on the personality of their head coach, and D'Amico's a guy, physical, tough. They play smart. They toe the line. I think they're really, you know, that's reflected in all three phases. You know, they have continuity in the defense and on the special teams where they've been excellent. And then I think they've been really dang good the last couple years on offense. Obviously took a little bit of a step back, but, you know, we know what a great coach Nick Caley is. They kept a lot of their great coaches that were already in place. You know, he and Jerry Shaplinsky are really the only new guys as far as I know. But it's excellent personnel. There's a style of play. There's a reason why they've been a top eight team each of the last couple years, you know, winning their division and then being able to advance into the divisional round. And, you know, they're excellent. We got a chance to practice against them a year ago, but everything that they're about is what I respect, and that's why we know it'll be such a great challenge, and that's what you love about the league.
I just love Sean McVay's voice makes me smile. Like, I don't know that anybody, their voice, especially on like a Zoom call like that, is different than what the guy looks like than Sean McVay.
Yeah. Well, I can't believe he knew how much Jerry Shaplinsky we've been talking this offseason.
For those of you who don't know,
Jerry Shaplinsky is a senior offensive assistant.
Yeah.
Or whatever. I don't know where whatever Bobby Slowick is in Miami, I think Jerry Shaplinsky is some of that. Kind of an assistant coach on the passing game coordator
to spend a lot of time next to CJ out of practice.
Kind of like, I think Bill, probably in a little bit of the same role as Bill Lazor, almost like genuinely when they say a senior assistant, almost like a guy who's been in the league, is really smart, and can kind of lend his expertise where it's needed.
That's a nice job to have. You know, it's just, you're just in there giving a little bit of advice here and there. Nobody in the fan base is pointing a finger at you when things are going bad. You're just, telling CJ, work on your footwork there a little bit. And then you go and you hang out, get a cup of Gatorade. You know, that's what it feels like. So McVay, great respect between these two head coaches. If there is a game wrecker in this game for the Rams against the Texans, it's probably Jared Verse. Here was D'Amico Ryans yesterday on this game being decided in the trenches, and he brings up Verse by name.
This game, I think, ultimately, it as right now, as I continue to go through it in my mind, I think it really hinges upon both offensive lines blocking two really talented defensive lines. The Rams have one of the best young defensive lines in the NFL, Verse, Fisk, Turner. Young, it was a young group, and those guys play, they get after it. They play relentless, they're tough. They're going to be a really, really good group to challenge our offensive line, and the same for their offensive line versus our defensive line. We have a really good group up front, one of the strengths of our team, and we have to, it's going to be a challenge to see how that shapes up, but both offensive lines are going to have to play well, and whoever wins that battle, I think, will ultimately decide the game.
The one guy I think that probably won't get discussed much at all, but I think is very, very relevant along the defensive line for the Rams is Puna Ford, the defensive tackle, because they did not have a good run defense last year. So they bring Puna Ford in, and I think that could be a difference, especially going against an interior offensive line that we have a lot of question marks about. Jake Andrews has played very little actual NFL football.
Yeah.
And what are you going to get versus this Rams defense, who was not a great run defense, but they bolstered their linebacking core. They bolstered their defensive line. Jared Verse is he's just vicious, man. He's so powerful. And Ariante Ursary versus Jared Verse is going to be really interesting to watch. But if there's one weakness that Verse had last year, he was kind of unaware in the run game at times. And there are things that teams could do to exploit that. He's talked a lot this offseason about how he's added to his speed rushing element. It hasn't worked his power rush hardly at all. Kind of like he's a lot like Will Anderson, Jared Versus. But I haven't seen a lot of people talk about him improving his run defense. That's going to be the thing I'm watching is, all right, is he dialed in? I mean, he makes some big plays versus the run, don't get me wrong, but he also gets caught unaware at times.
Yeah.
And if Nick Caley can exploit that, if that is still a problem, that's a big win for Nick Caley.
Yep, for sure. Puna Ford on the Chargers last year. That's got to be kind of nice. You sign with a different team, but you don't have to change any of your routine. You can live where you lived. You could just go into a different locker room in the facility there.
Puna made some really nice plays versus the Texans last year in that playoff game. I mean, he was probably one of the only guys that was putting in a good defensive performance in that game. So he's not doing it against the same guys this year, but I very recently watched Puna Ford physically handle some Texans offensive linemen. So that's and this is a team that probably for the first time in history has a Puna and a Puka on the same squad.
Okay, well, it's better
having
than
a Puka and a Puna.
It's better than having seven Jalen's on the team.
Yeah, no, 100%. No, I wasn't saying it's a bad thing. I think it was a really it's kind of cool.
Yeah.
They got a Puka.
No, that's why I said it's better. I said it's better than having seven Jalen's on the team. It's less confusing. Teron Armstead, offensive lineman who retired. You want to know how good Jared Verse is? Take a listen to this. What was this on, Seth? Teron Armstead.
This is I don't know. I picked it up off of social media, but they hadn't told me which podcast it was. But this is Teron Armstead. When asked why he won't come back to the NFL.
That young boy, Jared Verse?
Yep.
I'm cool. I'm good. I never got to see that man again. I'm all right with I'm okay with that. Never seeing that young man again in my life. Bull Rush different. Dog is different. You know that it's coming. You brace yourself. He's different. Jared Verse is different. He will be a defensive player of the year one of these days. Mark my words.
Wow.
That's a big that is a huge compliment when you consider the age of edge rusher that we're living in right now. That's Teron Armstead. You know, he's played for the Saints and he's played for the Dolphins. He's seen Jared Verse once. He's seen all these other guys multiple times. That's the guy that pops into his head right there.
That was on SiriusXM. They don't say, even SiriusXM themselves didn't say who the hosts were.
Yeah.
Way to take care of your hosts, SiriusXM.
SiriusXM's a little weird.
Yeah, they're a little weird on social media. They try to still act like it doesn't exist in some ways. Yeah. So they don't want their hosts to be able to make
get
money
over.
Off of it.
Yeah.
So, no, I think, Toronto, and honestly, you don't hear veteran offensive linemen talk too much about, this guy's got a vicious bull rush, because most good offensive linemen can handle it pretty well. I think it's a pretty good testament without me being able to show the highlight reel on radio of just how powerful he is. If you go, I'll post a highlight reel a little bit later that starts off with just three ridiculous bull rushes by Jared Verse. He's powerful, man. And for a rookie offensive tackle, especially like Ariante Ursary, Ariante's a big dude, but he does let guys get into his body a little too much for my liking. And in college, you can get away with it because you can kind of just lean on people. You can't get away with it versus guys like Jared Verse. So he's seen power rushes by Will Anderson and Danielle Hunter. He's certainly seen more speed and a greater plethora of moves going against Danielle Hunter than if he were going against any other defensive end in the league. Jared Verse is just a different type of beast, though. He's just when it comes to the actual power element of his game, there's very few guys like him. So I'm really bullish on Ariante Ursary, but this is a really big test for him in week one, as a test, obviously, for Titus Howard.
How does Nick Caley help him out? How do you help out Ariante Ursary?
Just all the old classic ways. You slide, but this is where it gets dicey. If you slide protection his way, that's exactly what happened to the Texans last year. They got predictable in their pass protection, and then you bring a blitz from the other side. The other big thing is helping out with chips, and that's where I think Woody Marks looking really impressive for a rookie in pass protection, that goes a long way. And this week one, if you had a rookie running back that was a really good receiver out of the backfield, but man, he just did not know what he was doing in pass protection. The last thing you want to do is have him help out Ariante Ursary with Jared Verse. But I think they might be willing to see how Woody Marks does in that regard. So the running backs and Nick Chubb as well, like all those guys, that's going to be a big part of it.
All right, Payne and Pendergast with you, 713-572-4610. That sounded like someone doing an impression of Sean McVay. Yeah, I just listened to his voice, and I'm like, boy, if he had to, because he's got a really attractive wife, I think, but if he had to woo her without the benefit of a visual, like if it was Love is Blind, that show where you're trying to woo the woman and there's a curtain in between you, Sean McVay would never get engaged. Because his voice, he sounds like a nerd. He sounds like a dork. Well,
his wife, this was something that I just kind of saw people mention in passing, and they didn't want to talk about it or discuss it. Because, I'm guessing Sean McVay wanted to keep it quiet. But his wife is Ukrainian, and her family's in Ukraine.
Yeah.
So a couple of years ago when it looked like the Rams were skidding off the rails, that was as everything was really heating up in Ukraine. And that's a whole part of it sounds like he's intensely private about it, because I've only heard it from kind of Rams beat writers who kind of brought it up and then quickly stopped talking about it. But it's everybody's got their own private struggles that you never know.
Ben, do you still have Sean McVay pulled up there? Can you play like the first 5 seconds of?
Yeah, they're a great team. You know, I think they take on the.
He'd be screwed on Love is Blind. Love is Blind, he'd be screwed. He'd be like behind the curtain.
Hey, how you doing? What are you wearing? What do you smell like?
He'd be totally screwed, man. That voice. He'd be the only guy on Love is Blind and never get engaged. It's crazy. All right.
By the way, Garrett Heinrich was driving his daughter to school, and she said she was laughing really hard when we were talking about the whole 6-7 slang that the kids are using.
She probably knows what it is.
So I told Garrett, tell her to define it. Tell her.
Yeah.
And she shrugged and then said, 6-7.
Yeah, right. Get the hell out of here.
Yeah. No, I don't think it does. It means, from what I've seen in my various searches, it means whatever the hell they want it to mean.
Oh, okay.
You can't attach a specific meaning to 6-7, apparently.
Okay. I need this to go away now. I didn't know it existed until Ross told me about it. So, all right. High praise for a Texans position group by somebody who was here, a national person who was here at the joint practices. This got me excited because this guy would know about good wide receiver play. We've got that for you. We got the petty cast. We have a good petty cast today. I promise you that. That's at the top of the hour. Deadspin tweeted yesterday, 23 hours ago, babe, wake up. Bill Belichick coaches college football today with a picture of Belichick with a big smile on his face. You know, I didn't even know he had teeth, but he was smiling in this picture. And then TCU right after the game ended last night retweets it and says, babe, go back to sleep. Yeah, Deadspin was all excited about Belichick coaching football, and then they scored a touchdown.
Deadspin's a thing still?
Scored a touchdown, I guess. Yeah, I guess so.
They turned into like extreme, like ridiculous clickbait for a while, so I think I blocked them on everything. I don't think I can see it. Like, it was like extreme, just like race baiting, like for absurd things and everything. Like it was weird. Yeah.
The only reason I'm seeing it is because TCU retweeted it. I'm seeing the retweet here. So, anyways, yeah, Belichick, not 6-7. A great debut. Not a great. Please.
I think that's how you use it.
Yeah. Yep. Not a great debut for Belichick last night. The one thing that irked me about that game, we'll get to Steve Smith here in a second. He had some nice things to say about the Texans wide receivers on his podcast with James Palmer, friend of the show. After the first touchdown, they could not stop showing, Michael Jordan and Lawrence Taylor and Randy Moss and Mia Hamm and all the stars that are in attendance at the game. And then, you know, by the early in the third quarter, it's 27-7. I'm like, show them now. They were showing Jordan Hudson, Seth. They were showing. I'm like, show them now. What are they doing now that it's 27-7? That's what I'm curious about. Anybody can be shown when your team is scoring a touchdown. I want to know what they're doing. I want to know what they're doing when one of the first plays of the second half is a 75-yard touchdown to the house. That's what I want to know. Because if I had to guess, I would guess that most of these fair weather a-holes probably bailed and are in the parking lot tailgating or on their way home at that point.
They're almost, Bill Belichick is almost, like, he's trying to turn UNC into a more extreme version of what they already are, which is known way more for their basketball than their football, obviously. Yeah. But now, like, get it to a point where it's like Georgetown or something, where the football team is an extreme afterthought, not even in the same division. He's going to get UNC relegated to Division D3. 2 or Division 3 if he doesn't get his act together.
It'll
be one of these schools. They've got Division 1 other sports, but football is Division 3.
What'll be real interesting, I think his next two games are against, like, FCS schools in that part of the country, like Richmond or Furman or schools like that. That'll be interesting if all of a sudden, like in the fourth quarter, he's in a dogfight with the University of Richmond. That would be...
If he loses to Richmond, man. Yeah. People at UNC are going to be so, I don't know, mildly peeved or something.
the people cutting the check won't be.
a lot of the NIL collective types. Yes. Yeah, that old tobacco money, you know? Those old tobacco owners, they don't cotton to Yankees coming down and ruining their football team like that.
You got that right, man. You got that right. So Steve Smith, who knows a little something about the state of North Carolina, he played most of his football career there, wide receiver, does a podcast with James Palmer. And Steve Smith was at Texans joint practice covering the Panthers, and he was very impressed by what the Texans have put together in their receiving core.
And if this offense takes a step, like as a whole, I think it'll be a big part of that will be Nico. But you're right, that competition's kind of cool, Steve, because somebody might be saying to you, keep an eye on Jaden Hicks.
They didn't say, that's all they said. They said, man.
I know. Like, I'm trying to decipher it, though.
I said, competition? And it was pretty, and then I was at practice, and I was like, oh.
Okay.
Oh.
Okay.
No.
Okay.
The little jitterbug. No. Oh. Higgins. Yeah. Oh. Hutchinson. Yeah. Oh.
Like Hutchinson's been surprising some people, I was told.
Yes. And you know who else is? Christian Kirkus is surprising people as well. But again, he made himself expendable a little bit in Jacksonville because of injuries.
Yeah. Because that offense did run through him. But he couldn't stay on the field.
Yeah.
So Steve Smith, Seth.
That was almost verging on Bryce Young type creepiness.
I was a little bit. Oh.
Ben, do you have Steve Smith gushing over Bryce Young?
Just to remind the listeners. He might be able to go find it. Yeah.
We'll get to it.
Yeah.
It surprised me that he was almost, it sounded like he was caught by surprise by Jalen Noel, because I remember he was very, very bullish about Jalen Noel. He liked Jalen Noel a lot when he was doing his pre-draft evaluations. And it is true. If you're outside looking in, you talk about the competition at wide receiver with the Texans. And because they didn't have a first-round pick at wide receiver, they don't have name-brand guys or anything, because Christian Kirk is largely kind of an afterthought. You look at the depth of the wide receiving right now, and regardless of how good any one of those non-Nico Collins guys does individually, I don't feel like, I mean, the last 2 years by the postseason, they're out there running on fumes with the wide receiving core. And C.J. Stroud last year especially, he's got pass protection issues, and he's trying to figure out if Robert Woods can somehow get open versus that Kansas City secondary. It was a mess. The fact that they were in that game at all, in a lot of respects, was kind of surprising given what he was working with at that point. So the depth, when you talk about the competition, it's not like they're competing to be all pro or anything, but you've got multiple guys that would be justifiably starters. That if you go into a game, I think by the time those rookies get their feet wet and come around, then you've got more than three guys that you would feel good about starting in a game. And that really would have been nice to have the last couple of years in the postseason.
They signed Deontay Johnson. That's how desperate they were at wide receiver at the end of the season.
And I talked myself into Deontay Johnson. That's how desperate
did.
I was.
Yeah.
I was ready for the explosion.
Ben was able to find the Steve Smith audio that you wanted, Seth.
Is this Steve Smith talking about Bryce Young or Jaden Higgins?
Everything that I've seen out of there, for me, I've seen bigger, more athletic quarterbacks not be able to anticipate the throw. That's not a knock on anybody. So before people start tweeting, you know who I'm talking about. I'm just talking overall in this evaluation process of a guy who's smaller in the measurables but has the heart and the desire to play. Man, I just sat there and watched you. And I'll be 44 years old. I could have got out there and ran those routes just the way you were guiding the ball. It was remarkable. I mean, I'm just like, I can lace them up. I can't do nothing, but it just sure looked good watching it, man. What a wonderful, wonderful display of why you deserve to be the first overall quarterback to be picked in this year's draft.
The most uncomfortable part was when he put his hand on Bryce Young's knee. When he was saying that, he may or may not have done that. I don't know. He's sitting right next to
that
him.
That was okay. No, he was more over the top with Bryce Young, but he was impressed. He was impressed, and he acknowledges being surprised that there was a lot of competition in the wide receiver room.
It was the stretch where he goes, Jalen Knoll. Oh, Jaden Higgins. Ooh.
You know what it is? I think it's for the undersized guys. Jalen Knoll is what really got him going.
Yeah,
and for Bryce Young, too, because Steve Smith was an undersized guy.
Yes.
So I think when he sees undersized guys, he starts to think of his own, you know, his own, the way he had to operate and everything. He gets excited.
Yeah.
Gets the juices flowing.
Big time.
So to speak.
Big time. Yeah, quite literally. So that was good to hear. Steve Smith, people are texting in. Oh, great. We're trusting the home wreckers opinion on the wide receivers. Look, Steve Smith has things going on in his personal life. That's his business. It doesn't affect his ability to evaluate wide receivers, okay?
Yeah. I don't think we're going to start acting like there aren't some really super successful people with really effed up home lives.
If we're digging into the personal lives of everybody who disseminates opinions, there's going to be very few opinions to listen to out there anymore.
How am I supposed to trust the opinion of this person in football who had extramarital relations?
Right.
I'm not asking him for marriage advice, man.
No.
I'm asking him to talk about wide receivers. You act like it was about. How did Steve Smith end up being are you claiming that he wasn't even a good receiver in the NFL?
Yeah.
Because maybe he didn't have a pristine home life or something? My God.
Mm-hmm.
Get your mind out of the gutter, you sicko.
Okay.
Yeah, you just got to always go there, don't you? You perv.
I didn't mean for that to happen. All right, Pettycast time. It would appear we're ready to be petty right now.
Oh,
I think we're primed and ready to go.
Oh, I'm so ready.
So ready. I'm Steve Smith level already, baby. All right, we got a good pettycast for you. College football is conducive to pettiness. We've got a great pettycast for you lined up next. Stay there.